Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
We have someone special on for this podcast. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Podcast, the podcast that not only gives you the latest medical information, but tells you how you should use it to live at the top of your curve. This is podcast 868B. Wow, 868B. I think that's 17 years or something. 868B, and we're talking with Scott, and I wish I could pronounce his name. So, Scott, tell me how to pronounce your last name.
I'm Scott Sicherer.
Scott Sicherer.
You can say Dr. Scott if you want.
I will say Dr. Scott, who's written a book called Food Allergies, A Complete Guide for Eating When Your Life Depends on It. It's a Johns Hopkins Press health book. He is a pediatrician from the Jaffe Food Allergy Institute at Mount Sinai's Icahn School of Medicine. Do you ever see, I should ask Dr. Scott something weird to begin with, as I always do, but do you ever see Carl Icahn at the school?
I think that would be a HIPAA violation if I haven't.
I just meant as a visitor, not as a patient, as a visitor.
I have not run into him, though.
So Carl Icahn is a wealthy philanthropist who has donated money to the Mount Sinai School of Medicine, which now is called the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. And one of the institutes is the Jaffe Food Allergy Institute there. And Scott, who writes this book called Food Allergies, a wonderful book explaining more than I ever knew about food allergies in a very lucid and understandable way, has written what I would call a great book, Food Allergies.
Thank you.
Let me ask you, Dr. and Scott, I shouldn't pronounce it, but it's Sicherer. The book is available on Amazon. It's in its second edition, so it obviously has done very well. Books don't get into their second edition unless they've done very well. We're often told that allergies both can be serious things like itching and then much more serious like problems breathing, but they also have some chronic effects in causing, I guess what people say, bloating and feeling of discomfort in their belly and maybe swelling of their intestine. I guess that's what bloating would be. What's the, if you look at adult and not kids, but if you look at adults, what's the breakdown? What is the chances that an adult would have one of these low-grade chronic allergies as a cause of their bloating or their,
yeah,
their,
well,
feeling
what,
of lack,
yeah,
of,
I think,
energy?
I think what you're bringing up is actually a good example of what ends up often being a misconception about allergy versus other problems that people may have from food. So allergy is defined essentially as an adverse immune response. The part of our body that usually helps us fight infections and keep healthy in that way ends up getting misdirected and attacks the proteins that are in our food, resulting in allergic responses. So it's an immune response. Now, what you were describing in the earlier part of your description, things like trouble with breathing or hives, skin rashes that happen soon after eating a food, those are pretty typical examples of an allergy and immune response. There are also some chronic problems that people have that are still allergic. For example, there are some chronic skin rashes, and there are some types of chronic gut problems, usually more in children. But some of the symptoms you described would be more classic for non-immune system adverse reactions to food, so that bloating, gas, loose stools. These are usually signs of intolerance, which is different than allergy. And the most common intolerance is lactose intolerance. So that's not life-threatening. It's not the immune system. It's the body's inability, and most of the world is actually like this, the body's inability to digest the sugar that's in milk called lactose, and it results in those symptoms that you mentioned. It's very common. In terms of the most common allergy among adults that you mentioned, it's actually usually a milder allergy of an itchy mouth or throat, just itchy. itchiness, nothing severe, from raw fruits and vegetables. That's the most common type of allergy, but it's usually not something to write home about. The more serious allergies are the ones that you began to talk about, which are the ones that are potentially anaphylactic. And for adults, foods like peanuts, tree nuts, fish, and shellfish usually account for those more severe types of allergies.
Now, I want to come back to the severe allergies and the peanut, milk, egg, the magic eight or the unmagic eight, I don't know what you call them.
The major allergens.
The major allergens is probably the correct way of saying it. But some of the physicians in our integrative and functional medicine units believe that the immunologic reaction, for example, that it isn't an intolerance to gluten, but a low-grade allergy that causes whether it is the gluten protein or another related protein, to trigger that allergy that has a low-grade, if you will, bloating feeling of lack of energy.
Yeah.
And doing an elimination diet with them seems to get them better. Is that's a true allergy rather than...
So I wouldn't classify it in the same way as the other ones that I spoke about. There is, of course, celiac disease, which is a type of immune response to gluten, in wheat and other grains. That's certainly a clearly recognized and relatively easy diagnosed illness. And then there's a non-celiac gluten sensitivity that's described, which is not as clearly defined, but it does appear to be an entity as well, and I think that's what you're describing.
You're obviously hearing an expert in Scott Sicherer. I will never
get
it right.
About it.
S-I-C-H-E-R-E-R. S-I-C-H-E-R-E-R. The book is called Food Allergies, A Complete Guide for Eating When Your Life Depends on It. Now, the other thing that we're seeing a burst of, or at least I'm seeing a burst of when I get complex patients that have had allergies ruled out, is a huge mess of testing, which at least when I went to medical school, we didn't think the tests of allergies were very accurate, except for the severe allergies. Is that still, where are we in the testing programs?
So skin tests
versus blood tests versus others?
So first of all, certainly the testing can be misleading. The type of testing that you just mentioned, which is the skin testing, and also blood testing for something called IgE, it's an antibody, it's the testing about antibodies that our body makes that mediate the allergic reaction. The test is actually very good at picking up whether the body's immune system is making these proteins that can trigger allergic reactions. But the problem is that many, many more people will have positive tests than are actually allergic. There isn't a test for a food allergy that's like a pregnancy test, yes, no. The allergy test, skin test, and blood test for IgE are really more of a statistical type of test. The stronger the positive, the more likely there could be a problem. And the numbers that come up even mean different things for different foods. So actually, the most important test is, believe it or not, the medical history. Talking to the patient to find out what's happened to them from ingesting a food or what they might be attributing to ingestion of food is very, very important. And it provides us the basis upon which to decide which tests to order and how to interpret those tests. So the tests are actually very helpful, but they have to be tested appropriately and interpreted appropriately, and that does take some skill.
Now, I want to get to peanut allergies and cross-reactivity with beans and other legumes in a second. But before we get there, I'm going to call on Bill Kaproth, who's our radio MD announcer, to tell us who the sponsor of today's program is and who brings us, if you will, this wonderful segment, on food allergies. Bill?
More of the You, the Owner's Manual podcast with Dr. Mike Roizen coming up. But first, I want to tell you about Organifi. Organifi is an organic superfood supplement line that makes quality, trusted nutrition convenient and accessible. We all know green juice is good for us, but have any of you tried juicing? Not only does it cost a fortune, especially if you're shopping organic, but it is also very time-consuming. And that's why I opt for Organifi Green Juice, an organic superfood green juice powder that you just add to water and get your greens on the go. It helps me sustain energy all throughout the day. It's quick and easy nutrition on the go. And it's not just any green juice. Remember, it's organic, and I want you to try it out, all right? Go to Organifi.com, and we're going to save you 20% off by using the code YOU, that's Y-O-U, at checkout. Once again, try out Organifi Green Juice for 20% off using code YOU, Y-O-U, at checkout at Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. Now back to Dr. Michael Roizen and the You, the Owner's Manual podcast.
And we're back. This is a segment called 868B of You, the Owner's Manual podcast. We're talking to Scott, S-I-C-H-E-R-E-R. Book is called Food Allergies, A Complete Guide for Eating When Your Life Depends on It. It's in its second edition from Johns Hopkins Press Health Books. It is available on Amazon. It's a wonderful, complete book. So, and there are a lot of chapters that, in fact, I think every chapter that I've read so far, and I'm a little more than halfway through the book, is in fact a question and answer about the leading questions relating to this. So, if you will, what do you do with hives? What do you do with itching? How do you do an elimination diet? All of these things, what is the skin test, are discussed in there. Now, one of the major childhood allergy that we grew up with was peanut allergy. And we've recently had a major change in the way people are given peanuts. I guess this was occasioned by the studies out of Israel initially, where they started giving young kids peanuts and saw a decrease of peanut meal, and they saw a decrease in peanut allergies right over time. Talk to us about peanut allergies and what should new parents do, and what should my son and daughter-in-law. My son's a pediatric endocrinologist, and They make sure that the floor is dirty in part of the house, so the kid gets exposed to dirt.
Right. So you kind of threw in two theories there, but let me hit the peanut thing first, which is this is a very big change in direction compared to what was said years ago. So back in 17 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended that children who are at increased risk for food allergies actually avoid having peanut until they're about 3 years old. The idea back in those days was maybe staying away from it was a good idea. But based on initially some observations of differences in rates of allergies in Israel and in the UK, that looked like children of similar background had much higher rates of allergy to peanut in the UK, where they basically didn't get peanut in the first year or two of life, compared to very low rates of peanut allergy in Israel, where they typically got peanut products in the first year of life. A study was done in England that randomized children who were at high risk, and it found about an 80% reduction in peanut allergy for those who were randomized to receive peanut early, which was between 4 to 11 months of age. So that study, which was in the New England Journal of Medicine a couple of years ago now, showed us, such a strong, clear difference that it resulted in a change in guidelines in the U.S. So in January of 2017, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease had an expert panel get together and put out a report giving advice for earlier introduction of peanut. It's a little bit detailed, but children who have severe eczema or who have a known egg allergy or probably other food allergies as well, kind of mark themselves as being at very high risk, and they also are at increased risk of also having a peanut allergy then and there. That particular group needs to get some testing done to make sure that they're not already allergic to peanut. But if they're not, then the recommendation is to get it into the diet. That might be done under medical supervision. It might be done at home, depending on what test results were. But that's the group that was studied in the paper that came out in the New England Journal of Medicine. To go a little bit further, the recommendations said, well, gee, you know, it worked for this high-risk group. We don't believe it would be counterproductive for a lower-risk group. So if you have a child who has eczema, even if it's milder eczema, maybe they're not as high a risk, they should still try to get peanut into the diet early, and they're talking about 6 months of age. And if even if you don't have any risk factors, you shouldn't be avoiding peanut for longer and longer periods of time. Of course, peanut is a choking hazard as peanuts. Peanut butter is a choking hazard for babies. So when we're talking about getting it into the diet, you know, for those high-risk kids as early as 4 to 6 months of age, or for the less high-risk kids at 6 months or later, we have to, of course, make sure that they're getting peanut in forms that are infant-safe, and people could talk to their pediatrician about that, making sure, again, for the high-risk kids that they're not already allergic, because you don't want to get an allergic reaction the first time you're trying it. But these are much different approaches. The rate of peanut allergy we saw increased. We did studies starting in 97, it was 1 in 250 kids with a peanut allergy. When we repeated the study over the years in 2008, it had gone up to 1 in 70, which is a tripling. We couldn't believe that crazy increase. And now we're hoping that this advice will be taken up and that we'll see a leveling off and eventually a decrease in peanut allergy. The idea being to let the body, if you're not allergic to it, to let your gut see it. That's the part of the body that's supposed to, tell the immune system, this is food, don't attack it, as opposed to not eating it and perhaps getting more and more allergic to it from environmental exposures without ingestion. That's the theory.
Now, you talk about a cross-reactivity, and peanuts are we call them a nut, but in fact they're a legume. Is
correct.
There a cross-reactivity with beans and other legumes?
Peanut's really a bean, but the sort of good news is 95% of the time people with a peanut allergy can tolerate other beans. So 1 in 20 chance you'll have problems with some other beans. Usually if you do, it's things like chickpea, lentil, lupine, or green pea. But most of the time, there's not a problem.
And now there also is a statement on many nuts. This nut was made in a factory that also processes peanuts. Is that little dust or whatever gets in the... In other words, when you see a walnut, should you avoid all nuts if someone has had a severe or significant reaction to peanuts?
Yeah, we're kind of entertaining two questions at once. One question is about the labeling. The labeling laws require that if a known ingredient is a major allergen, milk, egg, wheat, soy, peanut, tree nut, fish, or crustacean shellfish, it has to say so on the label. If it's a maybe type of thing, then voluntarily a company could say things like may contain in a facility with. And for people who are very sensitive to those foods, I do advise they avoid products labeled like that because there can be some small amounts, and some people are very sensitive, so they need to talk to their allergist, but usually they're going to be told to avoid it if they're very sensitive. With regard to tree nuts, it's a family of foods, and so although some of them are similar to each other, so for example, walnut and pecan are very similar. Usually someone's allergic to both. If they're allergic to one, cashew and pistachio are similar to each other. If you're allergic to one, you're usually allergic to both. But as a group, it's totally possible to tolerate, every tree nut out there except for cashew or pistachio, or be able to have many tree nuts except for, maybe walnuts. So that's something that could be individualized with your allergist. But, sometimes people decide to just avoid the family just to avoid making a mistake and picking the wrong one or having that cross-contact happen.
We've been talking with the author, and obviously you can tell he has a great deal of knowledge of food allergies. It's a complete guide for eating when your life depends on it. His name is Dr. Scott, and his last name is spelled S-I-C-H-E-R-E-R. It is a Johns Hopkins Press health book, available on Amazon, probably available on all of the electronic sites. It's in its second edition, and it is a wealth of knowledge about food allergies. If you're an adult and wonder if you have one, this is a great book. If you're a new parent or about to be a parent and worry about food allergies in your family, or worry about if your child will get a food allergy, this is a superb choice, maybe even a great gift to give someone who's worried about a food allergy, because it is so wonderful. It goes and talks about what are the unique concerns in the workplace, how to travel, what to do about lifestyle, how to make sure you get adequate nutrition despite food allergies. It really is, even talks about breastfeeding. And as you can tell, there's a lot of information about kids and kids' allergies as addition, as well as testing in the book. So Food Allergies, A Complete Guide for Eating When Your Life Depends on It, from Johns Hopkins Health Press, or Press Health Book. Johns Hopkins Press Health Book is the formal way of saying it, but it's a remarkable and wonderful book. Dr. Scott, I want to thank you for being on the program with us. And Randall, thank you for great engineering. We'll be back next week with a new podcast on the latest medical news and what it means for you and how you can live at the top of your curve, and a new guest. In the meantime, do read Food Allergies, and thank you again for downloading us. We hope you rate us.